B-Pod Studios.
Elgin. I'm a liar and a phony. One of those no good nicks you keep running away from.
Maz.
I'm a man. Well, nobody's perfect.
Felger and Maz. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Jaylen Brown to get it in. Does so. Long three for Kyrie's. An air ball. Tatum the rebound. Makes the shot at the buzzer, but it doesn't matter. So the Sixers, for the first time this season, have beaten the Celtics. Came right down to the wire. Jimmy Butler, the killer in the end, and the Sixers win the basketball game.
You missed Marcus in that position there. You did miss Marcus.
At the very least, it does breathe life into that stupid team. The 76ers end up beating the Celtics last night for the first time this year. 118-115 is the final. It's Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the boys once again today. And Tim McCone over in my normal spot. And you at 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on last night's loss? You want to try to defend Marcus Smart? On the one hand, I do kind of agree with McCone. It's like, okay, I can see where he's coming from. It's like he's trying to breathe some energy, some good hate, you know, because it feels like something is building between these two teams, even though it's not a real rivalry. But ultimately, it did end up costing them. And
Do you think that's what Smart was doing, though?
No, he's just hot. Like, at the moment, I don't think he was trying to be like, I can understand, like, you know, from 30,000 feet, it's easier to say, like, what McCone is saying. Like, yes, at least he cares. He's trying to breathe some energy into it. But no, in the moment, I think he felt like it was a cheap shot. He wanted revenge, and it was, you know, it was just personal between him and Embiid. So at the moment, yeah, selfish. It's tough for me because I liked it too, because at my core, I'm a big dumb gorilla. I was like, yeah, get him. And then the older, more mature me realized.
Shove him when he's not looking. Yeah. that'll learn him something.
I really did believe this was going to end up costing them. It did. And I think the proof of that is the 15 points that Jimmy Butler was able to put up in the fourth quarter, because Butler was held in check for most of that game, or at least while Marcus Smart was in the damn thing. And in the fourth quarter, he goes off. They ultimately end up losing that game. I will say again, though, if you'd have missed it earlier, as much as that sucked, and they're not going to get the three seed, I still don't fear the 76ers. Yes, that's a psychological win for Philadelphia last night, and their dopey fans. Oh, let's go celebrate with a hoagie. Ugh, the worst accent in all of America.
Water ice. Ugh. Yeah, coming back from the Poconos, grab myself a hoagie and a water ice at the Wawa.
Absolutely horrible. I do not fear that team because, again, it took Baines getting hurt. It took Smart and his stupid ejection. It took them not having Gordon Hayward. And the discrepancies in the free throws, 43-16, which I did think was out of hand. Philadelphia still only wins the game by 3 points. Like, I don't fear that team at all. I think there's still an inherent gutlessness in the Philadelphia 76ers.
Agreed. But, you know, last night, they have won. You know, they have won. They didn't get swept this year. And I don't know that the Celtics and Sixers are going to line up in the postseason, but they finally executed down the stretch. Embiid played well down the stretch. Butler played well down the stretch. So they have won. So I'm still going to take the Celtics over Philly. I don't fear the Sixers either, but I don't know. I do think that's big for their momentum, or at least halting the momentum of the Celtics in a one-sided rivalry.
John and Stoughton, you're next here on Felger and Maz. Hey, John.
Hey, what's up, guys? I hate this team. I really do. They piss me off. You know, he couldn't lead a kitty to the catnip. His leadership's awful. He's just 3-for-13 from downtown. I mean, you got to hit more than that. I mean, that's like Marcus Smart numbers. And then on top of it, anybody who feels good about Marcus Smart pushing that guy is an idiot, because that's not like being a man or anything like that. It's just stupid, kind of costing the game. And the fact that Aaron Baines going out is like, you know, taking the plug out the dam, that's going to cause everything to fall apart. That's pathetic.
Thanks for the call, John. And the further proof that it wasn't a smart play by Smart is that you had Danny Ainge this morning on Touch Ruin Rich say that, you know, ultimately call it stupid without using those words, because he didn't want to throw the player completely under the bus. And same with Brad Stevens after last night's game. Like, they didn't like it. Like, I think that they, you know, maybe liked that it, you know, they wanted to try, he was trying to maybe breathe life into the thing. I don't know. Like, they like where he's essentially coming from. He plays with an edge, and all of that plays into Marcus Smart's hashtag winning plays, right? I do believe that. But he can go out of control at times, and he did last night, and it ultimately cost them, and they believe that.
I mean, it's a good point by McCone earlier about Ainge.
If there's one person that can't really talk about this, it's Danny Ainge. I'm
good
sorry.
Point. Like Brad, pacifist Brad Stevens, like, Joelikers, he's rubber, you're glue. Whatever he says, bounces off him, sticks to you. Hands to yourself, Marcus. What are we doing? Joelikers. Like, I get that, but the Danny Ainge stuff, Yeah, it is, like, it is tough for Ainge to take the high ground. I hadn't really thought about that.
Brent in Shrewsbury on last night's Celtics loss to the Sixers. Hey, Brent.
Hey, guys. So, first off, I wanted to give Jones credit. He's been saying for days that they need to at least use that Baines-Horford lineup more, if not start it. And I thought that Baines-Horford lineup got us the 15-point lead. It seemed like, you know, you put one of them on Embiid, there's another guy there to rebound, there's another big there to help. A true big, you know, not Marcus Morris, who can't protect the hoop. And this starting lineup's driving me nuts. I mean, they need to get Marcus Morris out of the starting lineup. Put Baines in there if he's you know, when he comes back. Or
Brown. We've all been saying Brown. I think Brown should be in there too.
Yeah, but this goes back to your theory, which I buy into because, well, I tend to be negative too, but because it makes sense. From a basketball standpoint, it has made sense now going on close to 5 weeks that Jaylen Brown should be in the starting five. And you theorized that the reason he doesn't is because of all the issues behind the scenes. Well, and just looking on the floor at times when guys have popped off. Marcus Smart's done it a few times with Jaylen Brown. Like, Jaylen Brown seems like the guy that a lot of people don't really like. Or there's some sort of issue between him and some of the other players. And the reason he doesn't go back in the starting five is because maybe the whole thing blows up behind the scenes again.
If somebody could give me, like, McCone, you got any theories? If somebody could give me a better reason.
Because from a basketball standpoint, there isn't.
Been outplaying Marcus Morris. He's been outplaying
2 months.
Him yeah, exactly. So, I mean, maybe there's an if it ain't broke, don't fix it sort of argument for Brown coming off the bench. Maybe you don't want to screw with him, but the team feels a little broken. So get Brown in there. From a basketball standpoint, I don't really understand what the counterpoint is. So that's why I wonder if it's something off the court. I'm not saying it is. I wonder that.
Did G. Williker Stevens, was he that, I guess, was his tone that up after the game when it came to his disappointment of Marcus Smart? Because I would think it would be a little bit more down.
A little more subdued.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Come on, G. Willikers. Sticks and stones will break your bones, but names will never hurt you.
Tom in Connecticut, you are next here on Felger and Mass. Did this thing just freeze up? No, hey, Tom.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, what's up?
I just want to call, last night in the fourth quarter, we had Jaylen Brown matched up against J.J. Redick the entire fourth, and they went at him one time, and he attacked the hoop, got fouled. After that, did not go back to Jaylen Brown against J.J. Redick. Why not attack the mismatch and get some easy buckets?
Well, who do you put that on? Kyrie or the coach?
I think both. Brad Stevens going to drop the play and attack, or Kyrie's going to recognize that on the court.
See, get
down low and post him up.
I would put that more on the guys on the court because there's a good chance Brad wants that and they're ignoring it.
And if anyone's going to ignore it, it's Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying I definitively know that, but they hunted that matchup last year in the postseason. If McConnell's out there or Redick's out there, they hunted those matchups. So Brad knows that. Kyrie wasn't out there in the playoffs. Now he's out there and they're not hunting the matchup. So, I mean, I think the math on that is pretty simple.
Justin in the car on last night's Celtics loss. Hey, Justin.
Hey, boys. Just wanted to talk about the Marcus Smart ejection. And honestly, it was super unnecessary. I mean, how are you going to turn around after you take an elbow, which happens to a lot of players, and you're literally going to go shove this guy in the back? I mean, you're asking,
in the back.
Yeah, to get ejected. I mean, there was one thing. I mean, mostly when things like that happen and you're pissed at, you know, another player for elbowing you, you step up and you shove them and whatnot. Everyone gathers around. But when you do something like that, you're totally changing the game. That's going to haunt them later in the playoffs if we match up, because you just gave Philly more of a home court advantage, because psychologically they're going to be more fired up when we go there. So if they have home court advantage and we have to play them, I think that's just it's detrimental to the team. And I don't think it was a smart move for a player that's overpaid and he's going to go out and do something like that in a game and totally change it. I just think it was totally unnecessary.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Justin. Again, loved it in the moment for a good 30 seconds, and I realized, no, this is going to end up coming back and bite him in the ass. And it did. It did. And if nothing else, you're right, Jones, it did breathe life into all those troglodytes in Philadelphia.
It is true. The mole people poked their head above ground, and they picked their head up from their garbage, and they said, oh, we got a basketball game down here. I don't agree with one point in there. I mean, giving Philly home court advantage, I think that's significant.
Well, that's a given now. Yeah,
but,
they have it.
No, but I think that part of it is significant. The psychological edge thing that, ooh, now we have one over Smart. I mean, I don't know if that would apply in a series. I think the psychological edge of actually getting a game and having home court, maybe that matters, but not ooh, we got Smart's GOAT, now we can use this against. I don't know if that applies in the series.
We'll continue to take your calls on the Celtics loss to the 76ers last night at 617-779-0985. Got a couple open lines if you want to join us and your eyes aren't on the tournament, or maybe you're watching both at the same time, and if so, we appreciate that. But again, you can join us at 617-779-0985. Also want to touch on more on the Mookie Betts contract situation and a little bit more insight as to why he's so dug in. From Alex Speer of the Boston Globe. We'll get to that next here on Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
This is Felger and Mazz
on 98.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
I just don't know what to say anymore.
Wrong, sorry.
It's Felger and Mazz.
They could use a good ass kicking.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
I'm going to touch on Mookie Betts. There's a good call in the Boston Globe today, or at least on Boston Globe Online, bostonglobe.com, from Alex Speer, titled The Consistency of Mookie Betts' Negotiating Style. It is Felger and Mazz, 98.5 of Sports. It is Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the guys once again today. I just want to read a portion of this because it gives a little bit more insight as to why Mookie Betts said what he said and why he's looking to wait to a few more years to get to free agency rather than signing a deal right now like Mike Trout just did with the Angels a few days ago. Almost as soon as the words were uttered, after a handful of thumbs hit tweet on Mookie Betts' statement, "I don't expect anything to happen until I'm a free agent," a succession of conclusions followed like toppling dominoes. He won't re-sign with the Red Sox. The Red Sox have to trade him before he walks, leaves the team with nothing in return, and on and on and on. So let's get this out of the way, writes Alex Speer. Would Betts, who's made no secret of his comfort negotiating contracts with the Red Sox on a year-to-year basis, rule out the possibility of signing an extension with the Red Sox before he reaches free agency? Quote, "I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say, nope, I'm not just going to sign a deal. That would be a lie. But there is value that's there. I think I'm going to stick to my guns on the value." It's not necessarily sticking to not signing a deal. Now, this is where it gets interesting, and it's further insight as to why he's handling this the way he's handling it. Speer writes, "Betts' history of negotiations with the Red Sox is instructive, particularly his entry into pro ball. In 2011, after the Red Sox took Betts in the fifth round, the player and the club struggled to reach agreement on his value." So this goes back to 2011.
So I didn't know that. We've talked a lot, Jim, about
the arbitration.
All of his professional, and I guess this is technically a professional contract, but once he reached the big league level, those contract, I didn't realize it went back to him in his draft year.
Yeah.
Playing hardball with him then.
So he writes, "Betts was asking for $750,000, and the day of the signing deadline, the team was at $500,000. Betts was prepared to go to the University of Tennessee. Red Sox didn't want to risk that outcome. They agreed it was $750,000. Shortly before the deadline, he got what he viewed as fair value. A deal got done." I mean, I credit him here. You know, always hold out for what you're worth, and if you can get more money, get that money. But this really goes back to when he was coming out, which I didn't really even know.
I had no idea.
And just in terms of how they've handled it thus far, we have the report, was it Jeff Passan that said last year they went to him 8 years, $200 million. It just feels like even from the get-go, going back to 2011, the Red Sox themselves have kind of undervalued the player, or they haven't read the market correctly when it comes to Mookie Betts at all, at any step.
Or they tried to lowball him. Maybe they know the market. It sounds like they ultimately knew the market on Betts, right? And they just said, "Oh, let's see if we can get him for $500,000. And look, for a fifth, I think he was a fifth round pick. So, you know, I mean, maybe they just figured, hey, we can strong arm this kid. If he wants to play big league ball, we'll keep him at $500,000. And then ultimately they met him at his number. But it goes back to when he was choosing between college and professional baseball. And all the time he sees his value at one thing and the Red Sox are below it. So this is why I said yesterday, and look, $250,000 difference on an 18-year-old kid or whatever he was is not huge, I guess. It's not $200 million like the reported contract that he turned down, or actually he confirmed he turned down 8 years for $200. But they've consistently lowballed him. and they've consistently had to come meet him at his number. And now that next number might be 400, 450 million.
And so seeing what the market looks like and some of these big name guys that have gone for, well, Manny Machado has signed for and on and on and on. Do you think that there is any validity of the Red Sox within the next, not even just this year, but maybe heading into 2020, like they go again, offer 400 and a mega deal like that, just to test the waters, just to see whether or not he's really interested? Because if he says no, you have your answer.
Yeah.
You have your answer, and you have to consider trading him, especially when you see how barren the Red Sox farm system is. I would not do it this year. I think that there is a real legitimate chance, despite the bullpen issues for this Red Sox team, you're essentially returning the same team. The American League mostly sucks. They have a really good chance of repeating. You don't even consider doing that this year. But next year, if you dangle that in front of him and he says no, I think you do have to try to trade him.
Yeah, I mean, I my philosophy as a GM would be everything's available. I'm open for business on everything. So that would include Mookie Betts. And I would need to be blown away in a return for Mookie Betts. Like I said, the Braves want to get nuts and give me Ronald Acuna or something like that. Right. I'm always listening, but the likelihood that you're going to get fair value for Betts, I would say, would be low. So to me, I know it's dangerous to lose Betts for nothing. I've said this earlier in the week, so I'll keep it brief, but I think the Red Sox have as good of a chance as any other team to get him on the open market. So I'd let him play out the next 2 years. I'd let him play out the next 2 years unless I'm absolutely blown away, and I think that's going to be hard to do.
There was a little bit more here. I found this a little bit interesting. Spear wrote, Betts adding to his statements that he'd love to find common ground with the Red Sox and remain with the team. The quote was, "I love it here. I'd love to be here. I love my teammates, the front office, coaches, everybody. I couldn't ask for a better organization to be part of," said Betts. "But at the end of the day, you have to be true to yourself. You don't want to sell yourself short." And that part I agree with. I do find he's playing it perfectly, though, because I think he gets the market, and good for him, because I think if there was nothing about, like, I love the city, I love the fans and that kind of stuff, like, people would be a little bit more, people be a little bit out of their minds about this.
Yeah.
If you didn't hear that kind of stuff, it's like, okay, well, he hates the city and he just want to be here, and it would be all of that.
Bring it back to Kyrie. Talk to me in 2 years. I mean, if he said something like that, it wouldn't go over so well. Kyrie initially played it well, too, by the way. And so it doesn't mean Betts is out of the water. You know, Kyrie said, hey, I love it here and I want to be here. And he filmed that commercial. And so, you know, for about 4 months, that worked for Kyrie. I don't know that Betts is out of the woods yet, but so far he's played it pretty well, at least with the fans. I'd agree with that.
Mike in Wakefield on the Red Sox and Mookie Betts status. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, wow. Two negative hosts in the afternoon. Like, this never happens, right? I love you guys. Love it, man. I want to see that undercard match, too. The Vulture and, what was it, Bloodlust McBone?
Bloodlust McCone, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Loves violence.
Right, here's what I think, right? If I were Mookie Betts, like, if Mookie Betts was a free agent right now and you had to sign him to a deal right now, I think a more than generous offer would be 12 years, $350 million. I think that pegs exactly where he is in the market right now. Now, I think if you're going to project out two more years, I would say 12 years, $400 million. And if he doesn't sign that deal, he's a fool. I mean, how much more money is he realistically going to get than that 2 years from now? Plus, he's taking the risk that within 2 years, baseball's got, what, 182 games a year or something like that?
162.
So he's betting, like, within 324 games that he's not going to get injured, that his performance is not going to dip. Dude, take the money. What are you going to get with, like, if they were offering the deal? What are you going to get with $400 million, or $420, $430 million that you're not going to get with $400 million? Take the deal.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike. I can understand that. A lot of people feel that way, too. Also, you might want to get that muffler checked out. Go to Meineke or Valvoline Instant Oil Change.
Sounds like road rash. You remember that game? It sounds like a little road rash going on.
But that money, that number is just going to continue to go up. And I don't really blame him on betting on himself. And yeah, I'm sure he's not really worried about injury right now. I mean, it can happen to just about anybody, whether you're a professional athlete or not. No, like,
But this is what I said. I said this before. If you put the biggest deal, like 12 years, $400 million, I guess isn't the biggest deal, but if you put something approximating Trout's contract right now in front of him, I don't know how you say no. I don't know how he says no. I actually think it would be dumb if the Red Sox put a Trout-level contract in front of him now. I was saying they should have put a Harper or Machado deal in front of him because you knew Trout was going to reset the market. I didn't think he was going to reset it this much, but you knew he was going to get more than those guys. I think the Red Sox actually would be stupid to go to him now and be like, hey, here's 12-430. They got to knock it down to like 12-400 or something else like that And then, again, you're playing a dangerous game with him where you say, hey, at least you know whether he wants to be here or not. But if he doesn't take it, he also knows what your low ball offer for him is.
Jeff in Scituate, you're next on Mookie Betts here on Felger and Mazz. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
So before I even touch base on whether or not the Red Sox will get a deal done with Mookie Betts or, you know, what will ever happen in that, I personally think they'll find a way to get it done. But, you know, I think the thing that's been bothering me the most is there's not a baseball fan out there that wouldn't agree that Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. I get that. And there's no issue with that. So the idea that, you know, Mookie should make more than him is obviously, you know, on its surface is ridiculous because obviously Trout's the best player, but we all know how that works. If somebody really wants Mookie Betts as the second best player, because make no mistake about it, Mookie Betts is the second best player in baseball, they may pay $450 because they want it. So therefore, the Red Sox would be in that tough situation of having to battle with somebody who really wants to pay him. But the thing that's been bugging me is the whole idea that people don't realize how freaking close Mookie Betts is to Mike Trout. Everybody thinks this is a friggin' thing where, oh, Mike Trout is miles ahead of Mookie Betts. Well, let me tell you something right now. If you look at the stats over the last four seasons for these guys, because I understand Trout started earlier than him, and like that's in his advantage. Mookie's got, what, 2-3 gold gloves? He should have won the MVP 2-3 years ago when he came in second, because you look at the numbers for that year. The only reason everybody gets a Woody over friggin' Mike Trout is because his OPS is so high, because he walks 125 times a game.
Jeff, and we had to let you go on that. Yeah, I guess that was a little too harsh for our ways. But I agree with a lot of what he said, and I think that while Trout is, you know, by and large the best player in Major League Baseball in every aspect, I think Betts is a close 1B. And I know statistically there's some areas where Trout really is way ahead of him, like, you know, nerd war and things like that. But I don't know. When it comes to playoff success, Betts certainly has that over him.
Team success.
Team success, yeah. Well, because that's one of the things I've been on him for, too. But I think it is a lot closer than people give it credit for.
Okay, well, I mean, we can debate how close it is, how close Trout and Betts are, as long as we all can acknowledge that Trout's better.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
well,
yeah.
That's fine. I mean, I think there's a bigger gap. I think there's a bigger gap there than maybe that last caller did and maybe you did, but or do. But I don't think it's the end of the world to call Betts the second best player on the planet or 1B to Trout's 1A, as long as Trout's ahead. Then I'll defer.
617-779-0985 is the phone number. We'll get to more of your Celtics calls coming up here because I see a few of you still hanging on. One will yell about last night's loss and Marcus Smart getting ejected in the loss in Philadelphia to the 76ers. So your calls right after the Sports Hub headlines here with Tim McCone. Wanted to quickly touch on Ichiro Suzuki, who also called it a career close to the conclusion of yet another baseball game you probably didn't even know was going on earlier today in Japan. All of that is coming up here on Felger and Mazz, 98.5 Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke's blue.
It's Felger and Mazz, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Welcome back, Felger and Mazz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the guys once again. And Tim McCone in my normal spot. And you at 617-779-0985. We've been mostly Celtics so far as they lose to the 76ers last night in Philadelphia. Marcus Smart gets ejected. Your thoughts on that? Also touched on Mookie Betts and his contract situation. Pretty good column on that. And a little bit more insight as to why he's handling it the way he is handling it. Courtesy of Alex Beer of the Boston Globe. Check that out, bostonglobe.com. But Teddy in Chicopee with a thought on Marcus Smart last night. Hey, Teddy. Hello, Teddy.
They're using Kyrie Irving as the leader of the team to get going. What about the other professionals you got? You got that Morris 2 weeks ago. He complained about the coach not getting the guys going. He didn't do nothing last night. And that Jaylen Brown, he gets 6-7 points. And the coach for the Celtics, he doesn't know how to work the guys. He doesn't know how to work them.
Well, it does seem like there's a lack of leadership all the way around. And all of a sudden, you know, what looked like a couple of, well, I'm
certainly overrated that win over the Atlanta Hawks. I know that one hurts you to your core, Jones. But what looked like a couple of good wins since they came back. They obviously had a really good West Coast road trip. Everything seemed to be fixed after the group counseling session on the flight out to California. All of that has quickly been forgotten, and it feels just like the same inconsistent nonsense that we've dealt with this whole season with this team after last night
and
the last few games.
I don't get why people are surprised when the best player in the NBA, or best player in the NBA, excuse me, in the NBA, when the best player on a team gets criticized, win or lose. Like, that's when they win, Kyrie gets a lot of credit because he's the best player on the team. And when they lose, he gets a lot of the crap. It's like LeBron, it's how it works with LeBron. It's how it works with Durant. It's how it works in the NBA. Think of it like a quarterback in a lot of these games. Or think about it specifically how we talk about Belichick here in New England. And I think that's totally fair for Bill, by the way. Bill calls the shots. Bill has a hand in personnel. Bill hires the coaches. Bill decides on personnel packages. He can overrule the coordinators if he wants to. So he's a big hand in game planning week to week. If they lose, Bill gets the blame. And if they win, like they did in the Super Bowl last year, then Bill gets his ass kissed, and Bill deserves to get his ass kissed. It's the same thing with the best player on a team in the NBA. I don't get why people are shocked that Kyrie gets more credit or blame when things go good or bad. That's the way it works.
No, it is. And you look at Kyrie Irving and the attitude he's had all season, and then you look at the attitude that this team has, and it's hand in hand. So I don't know how you could look at that and say the leadership isn't a factor here when the Celtics really pretty much embody the type of person that Kyrie Irving has been this whole season. It's just, meh, whatever, roll it out and let's just do it, see what happens.
Let's go to Tom in the car on last night's Celtics loss to Philadelphia. Hey, Tom.
Hey, fellas. How you doing? I got to tell you, you guys consistently screw up a cheesesteak. You put barbecue sauce on roast beef sandwiches, and you screwed up that game last night.
Wait, we don't put barbecue sauce on steak and cheese up here. We do a lot of things incorrectly, but not that.
Barbecue on roast beef sandwiches. You can't. The food down in Philly is just amazing.
What's your favorite water ice?
Gelati. Do we have gelati up here?
I don't know.
I'm going to let you go on that.
I meant flavor. I didn't ask that very well. I assumed it came in different flavors.
Hey, don't talk smack about our food. We do food better than Philadelphia. We do a lot of things wrong, but not that.
Jones, one rule we have, don't engage with the callers.
That's a good point. That's a triple-A night show thing. That's true.
And barbecue sauce belongs on a roast beef sandwich. That's the way you get it, the three-way. Sauce, cheese, mayo. That's how it's done here. Brennan and Quincy on last night's game. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. What do you think about Joel Embiid's success last night versus the team? You know, he's always struggled against us, and now, after a big game, does it worry you at all going into the playoffs? Because he's really a front runner, egomaniac, as you hear him after the game.
I think, he had a great game last night. That's obvious. And, of course, you know, because of that, he's talking trash after the game, and he refers to himself as the most unstoppable player in the NBA. He is a front runner. The callers were 100% correct. I think he might be the most overhyped athlete in all of professional sports. There's times when I'm wowed by him. I think he's got good social media game. But boy, is he soft and quick to quit. And you've seen it before against the Celtics.
Well, yeah, last night I thought he was pretty good in crunch time, but generally he's been horrible in crunch time. You're right, specifically against Boston. He's a guy who consistently shrinks in big moments. Last night he had a huge swat on Kyrie. Like, a big reason they won the game was his defense at the end of the game. But as much as I've complimented him, even the shot selection for him and for that whole team is so poor. So poor. Like, he's bombing away on threes, and you're like, what? Why?
Right.
You're eating them alive inside. I know you can, in theory, step out and hit some threes, and maybe you take it from time to time. Why is that your go-to shot? Like, he would drive me nuts if we were in Philly drinking our water ice and talking about this team, but we're not. So, you know, I thought he played well, and, you know, he deserves credit for a night anyways.
Bill in Marshfield on the Celtics last night. Hey, Bill.
Hey, how much longer do we have to endure Marcus Morris on the floor late in the game and taking threes or shots away from Jaylen Brown, Hayward, and Tatum? We got to be developing this talent. Jaylen Brown was 3 for 3 last night. Marcus Morris was 2 for 9. Jaylen Brown averaged 15 shots a game in the playoffs last year. He needs to be shooting the ball. And Marcus Morris is overcommitting on defense. He's losing his man. We need athleticism to win. And I just don't see that enough. It's just so difficult to watch this team when it shouldn't be.
Preach, Bill. Preach. I've been saying it for now going on a better part of a month. that Marcus Morris should be on the bench. It should be Jaylen Brown in the starting five. It hasn't happened. There's no logical reason or explanation from a basketball standpoint that that hasn't happened. So, Jones, again, if you want to reiterate for the audience why you think it's happening.
I wonder if it's, if it's personal in the locker room. And I don't mean personal between Brad and Jaylen Brown. I mean, I wonder if Brad understands that if he puts Jaylen Brown in the starting lineup, it's not going to be a well-received move in that locker room. I mean, I wonder if that's part of it. And I'm with the caller on Morris, and I'm with you on Morris. Like, he probably should have been traded at the deadline. They should have sold high on him at the deadline, gotten something for him. And when I say something, just a draft pick. I didn't need anyone in return to clog up the rotations. I wanted more minutes for Jaylen, more shots for Tatum, maybe a bigger role for Gordon Hayward, and getting Morris out of here would have solved all of that. So I think some of that's on Ainge, too.
Quick roundtable. I just wanted to go around the room because there was yet another baseball game in Tokyo this morning that nobody paid attention to.
You didn't set your alarm, no?
No. No, but more importantly, Ichiro Suzuki of the Seattle Mariners officially announced his retirement after 19 seasons in Major League Baseball. You know all the stats, 3,000 hit club, 2001 AL MVP, Rookie of the Year, 10-time All-Star, like all that. But at 45, he announces retirement in the 5-4 win for Seattle today. But I don't know, when I was hearing this and, you know, I heard it in the Hub headlines a bunch during the morning. When I think about Ichiro, like, yeah, okay, we know what the stats are, and he's obviously an instant Hall of, first ballot Hall of Famer and all that stuff. But I don't know, do you look at him as one of the greats in your lifetime?
No.
Neither do I. Like, I don't know. Like, he was never really truly, to me, like a true impact player. Like, great, a lot of stats. I always loved like some of the aesthetics of his game, how fast he was, how quick he was out of the box. I liked his whole little setup when he was getting ready to hit, all that kind of stuff. But I never truly looked at Ichiro Suzuki in my lifetime as one of the all-time greats, or even like one of the top 25 players I looked at watched in my life.
He's the king of beating out a dribbler on the infield.
Yeah, yeah. king of the cheap single is really what he was.
Yeah, I mean that's how I look at him, and I don't know. I get very annoyed by the narrative out there that, oh, he could have hit 30 if he wanted to. Oh, he could have hit 40 if he wanted. Like, that's the dumbest narrative ever, I think.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he do that? I'd sacrifice some stupid empty batting average on little dribblers on the infield as opposed to a home run that puts a run on the board, maybe more if there are guys on base. No, I don't think he's one of the greatest players of all time, meaning top 25 or something like that. Does he belong in the Hall of Fame? Sure. That's enough hits to get into the Hall of Fame. But to make it sound like he had 4,000 or whatever professional hits also is very misleading, because the hits in Japan, those things shouldn't count. So Hall of Famer, sure. Craig Biggio is a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, right.
Is he one of the greatest of all time, or do I think of him as one of the top 20 or 25, as you said? Hell no.
Thank you. And I worked with one of these hardcore baseball nanas that love the advanced statistics. When I was in Atlanta, he had his own baseball show, and like, he would drive me and other people I worked with crazy. And he will go to his grave feeling that, because we got in an argument about Ichiro one time. I was like, yeah, good, not great. And he was like, blah, blah, and like throwing stats at me. He's like, he should have been the 2004 AL MVP over Vlad Guerrero, who had like close to 40 home runs that year. I wanted to choke him dead. Like, he's one of those guys that I think the hardcore baseball nana nerds really love, when because they want to reference war when people really didn't give a rat's ass about it like 15 years ago.
Yeah.
So good, not great, get over it with Ichiro. Sayonara. 617-779-0985. Our long commercial-free segment is coming up. We'll continue to take your calls on anything we've touched on thus far, especially the Celtics and that loss last night to the 76ers. We've got a Bruins Minute coming up as well here. Felger and Maz, 98.5, a Sports Hub.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
Felger and Maz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It's Jim Murray and Adam Jones in for the boys. Tim McCone alongside as well in my normal spot. Yeah, we're getting into some tournament action here today as the NCAA Men's College Tournament is underway.
Who is that, McCone?
We just had a bit of an upset. Oh. Almost had a bit of an upset.
That's McCone's reaction whenever there's a little bloodlust in a game. He's like, yeah.
Love it. Yeah. Show me broken bones.
Yeah. Smart. Yeah, he's smart. You shoved Embiid in the back. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Fill people in just real quick what just almost happened.
So New Mexico State had the ball with a second left, had a chance to beat Auburn, and the kid missed a three by about 11 feet. not even close.
It was really not close.
It was pretty bad.
Air ball. It was an air ball for the win for a 12 over a 5 upset. The New Mexico State Aggies? Aggies. Yeah. Not a good final bid there. Not at all.
For those that are watching this simulcast along with the tournament on NBC Sports Boston, you'll see that Adam Jones, the man to my left.
Looks like we know who Northeastern's getting. Looks like they're getting Auburn now.
Is all in Northeastern garb today. Northeastern hat. Northeastern, what would you call that exactly? It's not just a shirt. That's like a windbreaker type deal.
Like a hoodie. I don't know.
You are alum, and their game is going to be tipping off in mere minutes, correct?
Yeah, and that's in Salt Lake, that Auburn game. So they're up next in Salt Lake. So yeah, they get Auburn next. I guess put it in Sharpie. They'll be taking on Auburn in the next round.
So we have
Happy Husky Day.
We have Jones getting ready to try to do the show and watch the game at the same time, and I will be vehemently against all things Northeastern.
I encourage it.
Because
I mean,
the only reason I care about the tournament is to root whatever against it is you're rooting for. If I'm in a bar and you're all for fill in the blank, that's what I'm rooting against. Although I am pulling for Duke this year just because of how transcendent Zion Williamson is, and I know how abhorrent that is to a lot of people, including the two of you to my left.
You like the Blue Bloods. I understand. You like Duke. You like Kansas. You're not really a scrappy underdog kind of guy. You like the Blue Bloods in college basketball. It's okay. You're rooting for Kansas today against scrappy little Northeastern local team here in Boston. Austin, excellent school, and then you're rooting for Duke as well.
Yeah,
so that's okay. That's you.
Kind of a gross feeling, but this is what I'm about: the sports Schadenfreude, and it will be hopefully coming out in spades against Jones and Northeastern.
Oh, it's Schadenfreude for me, by the way, because you know how many games I've seen Northeastern play this year?
None.
This will be the third. I watched them in there. I watched them in the semifinals, the conference championship game, and now I am in my Northeastern gear, ready to go. Big game number three for the Huskies here in a matter of moments.
Wanted to touch on the Bruins for a minute as they have a game tonight against the New Jersey Devils with a 7 o'clock puck drop, which, of course, you can catch here on 98.5 Sports Hub with Judd Surratt and Bob Beers. There was, it's a few things we wanted to touch on. First, it was a Joe Haggerty hypothetical that he posted on NBC Sports Boston. Then we'll get to what happened between Haggerty and Brad Marchand on Twitter, which is hysterical. But go ahead with what Haggerty brought up with the bees.
Oh, so Joe Haggerty, his idea effectively is, are the Bruins more difficult to play against? I think he might have got screwed a little bit on the headline on NBC Sports Boston. I would give Hags this, but his takeaway is, are the Bruins more difficult to play against without Torey Krug in the lineup? He said, certainly the argument can be made that the bees are better defensively with number 47 off the ice, and that's an easy case to make after a Tuesday night shutout in which the Bruins limited the Islanders to just 2 shots in the first period and 13 shots total, and I would correct Joe Haggerty on calling that a shutout. That was a fake shutout. He continues with undersized defenseman Torey Krug and Matt Grzelcyk out of the lineup. The Bruins don't have any D-men that opposing forwards can really pick on, though it should be noted Grzelcyk is actually pretty strong defensively despite the size and strength disadvantage. So he actually gives Grzelcyk even more credit than Torey Krug there. He says the installation of Connor Clifton and John Moore back into the Bruins lineup, and Moore sucks, makes them a more rugged defensive unit and certainly gives them a tougher look in the defensive zone. He concludes, does it mean they should go with it, go with that lineup when Krug and Grzelcyk are healthy and ready to return? Absolutely not. Given that the Bees also need to score goals and they rely on Krug running things on their top power play unit, that's going to be a massive key in the postseason. But it is interesting to note how the Bees play differently based on their personnel. And I will double check the headline for you, because I think that's part of the reason that I think Marshy came out to play.
It's an interesting debate. I don't necessarily agree with it. Like, I've never been a big Torey Krug fan.
The question on NBC Sports Boston, are the Bees better off without Krug? So the headline didn't help him much, will say that.
It's interesting, and I think you can make a case for it in terms of the defense, because Krug has obviously always kind of been a defensive liability. But no, you need his scoring. You need him on the power play. I think that they do kind of miss him, even though they've been successful without him right now. But no, they're not. They're ultimately not. But from a defensive standpoint, you certainly can make a case.
Yeah, but So this is my thing, and I know, you know, Mr. Hockey over here, Jones, what do you know, Jones? You wouldn't know a hockey puck from, you know, from a hard burger off the grill or something like that.
That's usually the man who's normally here, so you know he's just puffed or stuffed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you wouldn't know if it's puffed or stuffed, Jones. Oh, Mr. Hockey over there, right? I don't know, like, Torrey Krug helps them set up in the offensive zone and possess the puck and keep the puck away from the other team. So, yes, if another team is established in the offensive zone and Torrey Krug has to stand up back there, he's not great at that because he's undersized. He also is going to be a hell of a lot better at not turning it over in his own zone, like John Moore, who might be more rugged in his own zone, but he's not going to help the Bruins break out or get set up offensively or keep the puck away from the opponent. So I think Krug helps you defensively in that way. The other team can't score if they don't have the puck.
All right, well, here's the other Joe Haggerty thing that I find far more entertaining than the debate as to whether or not the Bruins are better off with Torrey Krug. And that is what Brad Marchand said to him via Twitter. Brad Marchand, very entertaining with social media, by the way. But Joe Haggerty tweeted, I think it might have been yesterday. Either way, it was what we learned in the Bruins' 5-0 dominant defensive win over the New York Islanders. Are the Bruins better without Torrey Krug in their lineup? What we were just talking about. At least defensively, there's an argument to be made. Well, Brad Marchand retweeted that and commented above it. What kind of garbage is this, Hags? You don't even watch the games. You just stand at the snack bar the whole time. It's a great line.
Oh, Marshy.
Not so sneaky mean. If you've seen Joe, he's certainly a man that loves to eat. So that's a Brad Marchand pulling no punches there. It's very, very entertaining. And the commentary between Marchand and Krug, those two going at each other nonstop,
yep,
with the short jokes,
yep,
is fantastic. So a great follow, but this was very, very.
They call it chirping up in Canada. That's what they call it. Sorry, just chirping each other is what the boys are doing there. Just the boys are out there chopping it up. Yeah, the boys are chopping it up out there. Yeah, way to go, guys. Way to get my goat. No, you got your goat. That's what they're doing. The boys are just chopping it up.
And one other Bruins-related thing I wanted to touch on here in the email of the day, which comes to us courtesy of David S. I won't give his full last name in case he's working or whatever, but David S. wrote yesterday saying, "Hey, Jim, longtime listener to the show since 2009. This is my first time offering any kind of sports take to a talk show. It's disappointing, however not surprising, considering the source, to hear Kyrie Irving state that games do not matter and that he's going to take games off. I'm not sure if this was mentioned during today's show, however, but let's compare Kyrie Irving and Zdeno Chara of the Boston Bruins. Chara would never state that games do not matter or that he's going to take time off. He probably works as hard as any athlete. I think the Bruins coaching staff feels like they'd be taking their life into their own hands if they told Zdeno Chara to take a game off and rest. Also, just 2 days ago, Z mentioned how much he loves to still train and practice. That is true leadership. Plus, he's been beating the bag out of a couple of opponents in just the last few weeks at age 42. Kyrie's attitude and comments are certainly not that of a leader and can derail a drive towards a championship. Let's face it, Kyrie hates it here, and he's paving his way out. Zdeno Chara, he is a better leader." Great email for the first timer, and he's 100% right. Like, it's apples and oranges when you compare the NBA to professional hockey, but I don't know, it's tough not to do when both are going on at the same time at this time of year, and they're both going for a playoff push. But Chara at 42, the way the season he's had, what a tough SOB he still has proven to be, that's a real leader, not with Kyrie Irving. What he said yesterday ahead of that game that I thought was important, that I think a lot of Celtics fans thought was important, they end up losing to Philadelphia last night, saying, "Regular season games, who needs them? Playoff seeding, whatever, we're in anyway."
So, Chara's definitely a better leader than Kyrie. True. Is he a great leader?
You need more rah-rah? I think he's proven to be a great leader with these like brawls he's gotten in to set the tone recently.
I guess that's true. He's overseen some pretty big collapses here. He was there for a cup. He was there for a blown cup. He was there. There was a lot of talk the year before the Bruins won the cup about maybe taking the C away from him because he was out there and overseeing the lack of response from the Bruins when Mark Savard got pummeled by Matt Cook. So, I don't know. I mean, I think Chara is certainly a better leader than Kyrie. I wouldn't dispute that. I wonder how great of a leader Chara is.
Yeah, in the grand scheme of things, yeah, you might have a point. But
I mean, he's got the cup. You can't take the cup away from him, but there's some collapses there, too.
Fair, fair. But comparing the two, there's no question.
No, there's no comparison between him and Kyrie.
No question.
No.
Who is the greater leader? But good email there.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.